For those of you who I have not yet met, my name is Julie Kallenberger, and I am the Associate Director for the Colorado Water Center. Jennifer sends her regrets today that she could not be with us, but she'd asked me to step in and help facilitate today's class. So it's a pleasure seeing all of you. As a reminder, if you are enrolled in the class, please make sure you have your camera turned on so that we can see you and interact with you throughout the next hour. So it is my pleasure to introduce today's speaker, Sean Chambers. He is the Director of Water and Sewer at the Utilities Department in Greeley, just across I-25, for those of you who aren't familiar with the area yet. But Sean is a long-term friend of the Water Center and several of the projects that we've worked on over the years. And so it's a real pleasure to have you here with us, Sean. Sean, today, I imagine, is going to cover several things with how Greeley operates with its water utilities and some of the innovative projects that they have going on. Hopefully, you're going to point to or talk a little bit about Terry Ranch Project. And if not, well, even so, we have several handouts and videos that we can share with the group that I think they would find interesting on that project. But Greeley's facing some real challenges with projected population growth. As you all know, the South Platte Basin is one of the highest projected growths. And so Greeley's right in the center of that. So they're really at the forefront of the planning to help address that and many of the challenges that we're facing with urban spread and agricultural lands. And so I'm sure he'll touch on all of that. Very interesting. And so without further ado, Sean, the floor is yours. And I guess I will add that if anybody has any questions throughout, you're welcome to raise your hand or drop it in the chat. If not, we do have some time at the end where Sean can answer any questions. So it's all yours.
Well, great. Thank you, Julie. And this is awesome. I'm honored to be here this afternoon and so pleased to see so many people interested in the subject of water resources and Colorado water. It's just an important piece of how the quality of life and our economy and all things Colorado interact. And so I've got a presentation I'll share with you today, but a little bit about me. I'm a fellow CSU graduate. I fell in love with water. I'm a Colorado native, and I'm blessed to work as the Director of Water and Sewer Utilities here at the City of Greeley. I love that water is an activity that requires continuous education. There's opportunities to innovate. Most people think about innovation in the space of like technology and that kind of sort of tech sector. But in water, we have to constantly innovate and we have to stretch what prior appropriations can do to solve current problems with law that was created, you know, more than 150 years ago. So there just is really a fascinating discipline around water. And today I'm going to share a little bit of the background on the challenges that any local municipal water provider has. And I'll share some of the really specific information about Greeley Water, our legacy, and what we do and how we provide service. So if you'll bear with me a moment, I'm going to share my screen. We'll get it set up here.
Looks good. We can see it on our end.
I suspect you see the presenter mode, though.
Yeah. There you go.
Now we're good, right? Okay. All right. So as noted, I'm Sean Chambers, Director of Water and Sewer Utilities for the City of Greeley. I wanted to share this image with you. I don't know how many of you had awareness of the 2002 drought, but this is the Poudre River right up near Bellevue, near the Watson Fish Hatchery. You know, you can see barely enough water in here to, you know, have any aquatic life, much less sustain municipal supply. And so these are the kind of drought events that are one of the many challenges that a municipal water provider or any other water user has to navigate. A, a brief overview or outline of what we're going to talk about today. I was going to give you an introduction to kind of the anatomy of a local water provider, some background on the legacy that Greeley shares in the water space, talk about some challenges that many water providers, including Greeley, face, some of the strategic planning challenges, and then some of the workforce development, leadership, and regional opportunities type challenges. And then we'll end with plenty of time for Q&A. I'm very interested to hear your questions and interested in learning from you all as much as you learn from this presentation. So jumping right in, the anatomy of a local water provider. So not all water providers are really created equal, right? Some of us are organized under Title 32, which is a local governance statute in the Colorado Revised Statutes, and then others are organized under home rule municipal charters. Greeley is the latter. Fort Collins would be a home rule municipal charter, as would most other cities. But folks like East Larimer County, North Weld, Fort Collins, Loveland, these are districts formed under the Title 32 statutes. We often operate as an enterprise or a government business. We're most often funded by rates and fees, but not taxes. Most are exempt from TABOR for that reason. Rates and fees have to be based on a practice known as cost of service methodology. So that's making sure that as a basically a nonprofit that we're only charging customers what it costs to provide service. Now that calculation can be a bit more complex. It can take into account future capital planning, futures investments in water rights and storage. It can take into account risk and debt service coverage. So it is not as maybe straightforward as some might like, but it is a not-for-profit government business. We have an obligation to serve our customers 24/7, 365, and into perpetuity. So that means when we make a commitment to a new subdivision or a new growth area of the city, that commitment is perpetual. Water service assets, facilities, infrastructure that are under management and operation by each utility are often valued in the billions. Water rights portfolio is very similar, often valued in the billions. So it takes a lot of assets under management over, you know, decades or centuries of investment to provide safe, reliable, affordable water. A little bit about the Greeley legacy. History is one of our favorite things to talk about here in Greeley. Our roots are deep. The Union Colony was an agrarian utopian settlement. They, after scouting the area, decided to settle at the confluence of the Platte and the Poudre River. Great property for an agricultural society. Believe it or not, folks who wanted to come west had to apply to the Union Colony organizers. They had to pay a fee, and they had to prove that they were of high moral character and that they had both the skill that would be required in the frontier settlement and an ability to farm. So they needed to have some kind of trade or professional skill, as well as the ability to farm. With that upstart of the Union Colony, quickly the colonists dug the number three ditch. It was the entire ditch was dug within 10 months of arriving in what is now Greeley, and the ditch still winds through the city today, providing water for parks, gardens, golf courses, cemeteries, and other non-potable demands. Quality and quantity challenges on the river are an early part of our history, and that's a shared history up and down the river. So water quality wasn't great on the lower Poudre right from the early days. And the more irrigation that developed, the more we had these return flows off the land, and that return flow degraded the water quality in the lower part of the river. We also found that reliability of supply was pretty limited. So outside of the main runoff season, the reliability really diminished quickly, and therefore to irrigate crops all year round, we really needed to work more strategically and get more creative to be able to have that year-round supply and integrate storage. Our forefathers were very creative and resilient in terms of overcoming the limitations and challenges of this early period. Greeley filed for a change of water rights in the early 1900s, one of the first change cases filed under Colorado water law. We acquired a large site near what is Bellevue, built wood stave pipe and a treatment plant up there to treat water up at that location and then pipe it down to the citizens of Greeley, 36 miles away. Very, you know, innovative and forward thinking for 1907. Also thereafter, when the water supply again became constrained, really was kind of the birthplace for the ideas that formed what was known as the Grand Lake Committee, which later fostered the idea of the Colorado Big Thompson Project. The pioneers that came before us in water had to be innovative and resilient to meet the challenges of their day. Wanted to share this slide, which gives some insight into what it means in Greeley to be a municipal utility. These are some core areas where we focus. I noted this perpetual commitment that we make to our customers, and to go into a bit more depth, the provision of safe, reliable water service is fundamental to that commitment. Maintaining financial health and utility sustainability is also important. Managing risk and uncertainty is fundamental to our business. Asset management, asset maintenance, and investment in the system is also a cornerstone. We want to contribute to an environmental health and safety. We want to foster water conservation and wise water behaviors, foster strategic innovation, support equity in public health and in higher quality of life. We want to support a diverse and growing economy, fostering leadership development and growth both within our organization and the Northern Colorado water community. So we'll dig into the challenges piece. This is kind of the core of what I was asked to talk about today. And one last sort of bit of background. What you see before you is a map of the city of Greeley municipal water system and the sources we utilize. So big picture, the city of Greeley has access to water from four major river basins. And those basins include the Upper Laramie. If you've been to the top of Cameron Pass, you'll notice that if you go out to Chambers Lake, the trajectory of the flow in the river is down gradient to the north. That's the upper headwaters of the Laramie River Basin. The city of Greeley and some other agricultural water owners utilize the Larimer-Pooter Tunnel to bring water over into the upper Pooter Basin from the upper Laramie Basin. And so this is one of the four basins. We, of course, have native Cashel-Pooter Basin rights. We have Big Thompson rights that we divert through the Big Barnes Ditch and other infrastructure into Boyd Lake, Lake Loveland, and the Seven Lakes system, all in the Loveland area, utilizing a different treatment plant for those water rights down at the bottom of Boyd Lake. And then we have Colorado River water that comes to us via the Colorado Big Thompson Project and the Windy Gap Project. And as you may have heard, there's a new reservoir that's imminent to be constructed down in the hills west of Loveland. That reservoir is known as Chimney Hollow, and it's part of the Windy Gap Firming Project, an effort to better firm those Windy Gap rights for the municipal subdistrict users here on the Front Range. So, wanted to talk a little bit more about kind of how the business has changed for a municipal provider over time. And Greeley, by way of example, made this big investment in Bellevue in the early 1900s. At the time, our population was 5,000 people, and the pipe we built was wood stave. We actually shipped in the lumber and had a mill set up on site to actually manufacture the pipe. And our first deliveries happened in 1907. Fast forward to today, and Greeley's about 111,000 people. We have really steady growth. We haven't seen the spikes and valleys other communities have, but 3% is so reliable, you can almost set your watch to it. We have two potable water treatment plants, one up at Bellevue, one over at the Boyd Lake site that I mentioned earlier. And we have a renewed focus on how we supply outdoor irrigation, looking to non-potable irrigation infrastructure and systems to allow the community to maintain a quality of life and an aesthetic that we've come to know, but to do that with water that's the right water for the right use and doesn't obligate our treatment plant to meeting peak demands. Today, we treat and deliver water for about 150,000 people. And the delta between the 111,000 Greeley residents and the 150,000 we serve are communities like Evans and Windsor, to which we treat and deliver some of their water back to them so that they have reliable treatment services. Julie mentioned population growth being a pretty big driver of Greeley's situation, and it absolutely is. When you get east of I-25, I think you'll all recognize that land availability is much different. Greeley's long-range growth boundary is large, and our 50-year planning horizon has analysis by the state demographer and others that concludes that we will be 260,000 people in the year 2065. Our current supplies are not enough to meet future needs, even with a robust water conservation program. And therefore, we must develop new water sources while maintaining affordable rates. Some of the challenging conditions, I'm not intending to go into detail in the subsequent slides to cover all of these, but I thought it would be worth kind of checking in the big picture. So the robust regional economy and economic growth absolutely creates challenges for us. We see the Denver area and their robust economic growth coming north, buying up water rights from the Poudre Basin. A large share of ditch rights was acquired in the Windsor area by the city of Aurora. We see the the Arapahoe County Water and Wastewater Authority acquiring water rights in the Poudre Basin and beyond. And you've probably read in the Coloradoan about Thornton and their effort to divert water from the water supply and storage company system and pipe that water down to Thornton. So you can see that Northern Colorado and its water supply are absolutely in the target for supply development by the Denver Metro Group. Water resources are limited in Northern Colorado. We have our own robust economic growth, and that supply and demand equation makes it complicated and expensive to develop water here locally. Resource scarcity is driving rapid price escalations in Colorado Big Thompson water, which is the most fungible or movable water supply. It's been the gold standard historically, and that rapid price escalation has rippled outward into other water types. The Colorado River systemic drought and shortage is another real challenge that we face in the future. All Northern Colorado municipal water providers will face this challenge. Some water providers have extensive Colorado River supplies, meaning the majority of their system is based on Colorado River water. So there's much risk to manage here across the Northern Colorado water provider scene. Water projects in general take a really extensive amount of time to develop the water supply and permit the infrastructure, covering the range of local, state, and federal permits that are often required. The cost of resilient infrastructure is tremendous, and the timeline to develop it is challenging. Wildfire in our watersheds is a challenge that municipal water providers have dealt with over the last 100 years, but with climate change compounded with 100 years of managing forests in a way that have set them up to burn and burn catastrophically in large numbers of acres, we really have an insurmountable challenge ahead of us in terms of impacts to our watersheds. Workforce and talent development is fundamental to any business, and especially municipal water utilities. And because we're government owned and operated, we have certain salary and financial limitations that maybe a private sector company wouldn't. Regional collaboration is both a real challenge, but an opportunity. And fundamentally, we're a region in economic terms, we're a region in water resource terms. And so regional collaboration offers us a lot of opportunity for resiliency if undertaken appropriately. And then one of the last challenges that I see in our business and our sector is how we empower data analytics. How do we utilize the tremendous amount of data that we collect, that we have, to make better data-driven decisions? A little bit of insight back on Greeley. We have a master plan, a bit dated back to 03, we hadn't updated that plan really in almost 20 years as a result of being in the midst of a federal permitting action. So the permit to expand Milton Seaman Reservoir caused us to be rather cryptic with our data for a long period of time. So we wouldn't be in a position to update that master planning data analysis and publish it. A side note, the picture at right is Milton Seaman Reservoir. If you haven't been to the reservoir, it requires a short hike from Gateway Park. It's up the North Fork of the Poudre River. It's really a beautiful place. And the city of Greeley, since really about the year 2000, had been envisioning an expansion of that reservoir site. The site is currently about 5,000 acre feet. And you might be able to discern from the photo that it's a rather natural reservoir site. It's on channel. It was built in the late 1940s. Works Progress Administration money and resources were used to construct it. And at its current size, it's a very natural reservoir configuration. But to meet the city's future demands, we were planning a very large expansion. Planning to analyze and prioritize investments is one of the fundamental tenets of master planning, and it's an important exercise that all municipal water utilities must undertake. Continued water acquisition and storage is one of the key tenets of Greeley's master plan from 03. So both water acquisition and development of storage. Investments in infrastructure, meaning pipelines, treatment plants, and other pump stations and related projects that make the system operate day in and day out. Enhanced water conservation is an important piece of how we intend to meet our long-range demands. And then public communication and engagement is not a traditional value or priority for water utilities, but it certainly is in Greeley. We have a rather well-developed community sense of water rights based on our agrarian roots. We know that water is a fundamental ingredient like land, labor, and capital. And thus, we want to make sure that we're communicating effectively with our citizen constituents. The city is undertaking an update to its master plan. We're undertaking an integrated water resource plan currently. We updated our raw water model back in 2020. And based on that updated fundamental analysis, we're moving forward to incorporate scenario planning and develop tools for dynamic and adaptive management. All of this is really designed to meet the challenge of continuous improvement, to align resources with talent, with strategic thinking, and to execute and be able to adaptively manage going forward.
Hey, Sean, just quickly on the integrative plan that you mentioned, are you working on it in 21 and 22 and it'll cover the next several decades, or what's the timeline on that?
Yeah, great question. So the intention is that it'll be built in a way that we can, you know, work forward for several decades under its assumptions. But similar to what you see like in the technology sector, where innovation is happening more rapidly, we see the variables in our business changing more rapidly. And we know that it needs to be updated more often than like every two decades. Mm-hmm. Somewhere between 7 and 10 years is a best practice for updating an IWRP. And while the scenario planning tools will give us a lot of insight in how to adaptively manage under different future conditions, we still think that there's cause to do updated data analytics in that 7 to 10 year period and make sure that we're really tracking to meet our long range goals. And then additionally, you know, I made mention of this 50-year planning horizon. 50 years is definitely a best practice in the water utility space based on the challenges of developing new supply and new projects and the complexity of permitting. It's also based in or rooted in case law in Colorado that anything beyond the 50-year horizon is in some way speculation. Mm. So that's the framework under which we work to develop projects.
Great. Thanks for the clarification.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk a little bit about the challenge of escalating water costs. And I realize there's a lot of information on this slide, but fundamentally, Water rights markets are influenced by a strong economy, and it's a supply and demand equation. And the Colorado Big Thompson Water Unit has long been the gold standard across northern Colorado. It's the gold standard because it comes with an adjudication that allows it to be moved out of agriculture and into municipal use very easily. It does not require a change case, so very low barriers for that transaction to transpire to move it from one sector to another. And the Northern District, who owns and operates much of the infrastructure in partnership with the Bureau of Reclamation, you can see the map at the lower right. This is the Colorado Big Thompson system. That system or network of infrastructure means that there's very little local infrastructure investment that has to be made to secure this reliable source from the Upper Colorado River Basin. And so based on that ease of transaction, that fungible nature that allows it to move from one use to another, to be used in almost any NOCO municipality, it's long been a very strategic buy or an attractive asset for growth and development in northern Colorado. You can see the graph at the bottom left. It articulates the information that over time, the number of municipal and industrial units in 1960 was very small, and today it's very large. And conversely, the number of units in agriculture has diminished greatly over that same time period. And that really represents a transaction from the ag sector into the municipal and industrial sectors. And so today, less than 8% of the Colorado Big Thompson units remain in agriculture and might be transacted upon at some future date. The others are pretty well locked up in municipal or industrial sectors where they're not likely to ever sell or transact again. And part of that is the municipal sector, right, is obligated to provide perpetual commitment to its customers. And so therefore, a municipal sector provider is never likely to dispose of any water asset. A quick bit of math here at the bottom center of the slide, just to frame the cost here for you a bit. The average cost of a Big Thompson unit is floating somewhere between $55,000 a unit and $60,000 US per unit. And a unit doesn't yield a full acre foot. I think most of you know an acre foot is 1 acre, 1 foot deep. This is an agricultural form of water measurement that's been with us, you know, for more than 100 years. And in sort of general terms, that's about a football field covered 1 foot deep in water. And so at $55,000 to $60,000 a unit, it's important to know that the Big Thompson system only yields about 7/10 of an acre foot per unit. And so that means the cost per acre foot is in the $78,000 and up range. Most cities or water districts require half a unit to a full unit of dedication of raw water for any new home in a new subdivision or development. And so this is a really tremendous cost on the cost of new housing. The cost is being driven by scarcity. Supply diversity helps for a local water provider, but requires a big infrastructure investment to make that happen in most cases. Thus, most water providers and developers are pretty limited to the sources of supply, and Big Thompson Water is one of those key sources of supply. And so as scarcity grows, inflation in the price grows, and the inflation ripples out into other supplies that are akin or next best to the Big Thompson Water. So we really have a challenging water market here in northern Colorado, and it's having a big impact on affordable housing and the ability to make sure that everybody has equitable access to affordable water.
Sean, sorry, I think I accidentally muted you when I was trying to unmute myself, but I wanted you to know that there's a couple questions.
Great. Go ahead.
Let's go with Dixie first. Go ahead, Dixie.
Okay. So one of my questions was with encouraging conservation with customers, I guess, is that more expensive for the utility, or do you still have to increase rates a bit to kind of keep up with that cost of service as water gets more expensive?
That's a great question. At current prices, there's still a good return on investment to invest in water conservation. And there's a lot of municipal providers, including Greeley, trying to better understand the economics of that. There's NGOs like Western Resource Advocates who've really put some time and energy and resources into kind of fleshing out case studies and scientific information, or, you know, social science information on that. And I think the reality we know is that the way we use water in a lot of outdoor irrigated non-essential turf applications today is unsustainable. And as water price, exactly. And as water prices climb, the ROI on converting those non-essential turf grass into a more water-wise landscape grows. It becomes a better return on investment to do that kind of work. Let me jump into this slide, and I'll walk through a little bit more information on that. And then if I don't fully answer that question or this or the other questions, I'd be happy to come back to them. Big picture, based on Greeley's long-range growth plan, we know that demand management, wise water use, and conservation are fundamental to being able to meet the long-range demands of our city and our citizens. So we have to have a robust conservation program. Since the year 2000, gallons per capita per day for most Front Range water utilities have decreased by 25%. And that's true for Greeley as well. You can see in the graph that the data set from 97 through 2018, population increased rather significantly. And this population served number here is reflective of Greeley plus our regional service neighbors at Windsor and Evans. Meanwhile, demands have remained relatively steady, meaning even as our customer base grew, our conservation efforts and efficiencies in, you know, indoor plumbing and other fixtures have held our demands relatively constant. Over recent years, and of course, weather patterns make an impact on this, but some updated data beyond what's in the table. In 2020, the city of Greeley and connected agencies used 27,680 acre feet, which was about 9.02 billion gallons. The numbers on the right side of this graph are total metered usage in billion gallons. So you can see that we, you know, are using somewhere between 9 and 10 billion gallons in sort of any given year, and then the population number is at the left. So water conservation is a fundamental piece of long-range water supply planning. It does come with some challenges, though. We're diminishing that reserve fund, which is like a lawn reservoir. So when we do hit a drought, our demands have been hardened. We don't have as much lawn reservoir to go back and restrict use on and to save water. And then conservation also comes with a cost, right? It essentially drives rates and fees. We need to generate more dollars for capital and operational programs off the same amount or even less water use in some cases. And, you know, strategically, the real challenge there is making sure that you keep support from your policymakers and your community to do this in sensible increments, which are not like knee-jerk responses to weather events or political events or otherwise, but that you're methodical about making sure that you're increasing rates to meet revenue requirements and you're steadily implementing conservation and demand management strategies to make sure that population growth isn't driving water resource requirements. And then lastly, we're also challenged by just the elasticity of demand. We see that as prices go up, customers respond, they use less, And to maintain our revenue requirements, that means we even have to make a bigger adjustment in rates or find ways to make adjustments to the non-unit cost of water, meaning the base availability or the other component that is a fixed cost, a non-negotiable charge to the customer. So we have to navigate some of those strategies to ensure we meet revenue requirements while conserving water. Does that answer the question? And are there more that I can touch on here before we move forward?
Yeah, I think we should touch on the one in the chat by Dick Tinsley. He was asking about the cost of the CBT per unit. Is that $55,000 to $60,000 a one-time cost, or is that an annual cost that purchasers would incur?
Yeah, great question. So that's a purchase transaction cost. So that's a unit is like a share in a, you know, publicly traded company. So you're paying $55,000 to $60,000 to own that that access to that unit of water. And then there are some annual fees that any ditch company or water shared mutual water agency will charge, which cover more of their operational costs, right? So that ranges from, you know, several hundred dollars up to maybe $1,000, depending on the system and the magnitude of investment and the economies of scale. The Colorado Big Thompson project, because it's been around so long, because the infrastructure was, you know, built in 1940s era dollars, those operational costs remain pretty low. It's largely a gravity system from the West Slope to the East. Really, you know, magnificent engineering keeps those year over year transaction costs pretty low. Any other questions on water cost or Colorado Big Thompson project?
I think you're safe to proceed.
I'm going to move past conservation into non-potable. So this is another piece of our long-range water supply strategy. And the fundamentals here are the right water for the right use. And particularly down in Greeley, where we are on the Lower Poudre River, we have access to quite a bit of river water that would be very challenging to treat and deliver for potable drinking water consumption. But that water is perfectly good for irrigating crops, irrigating golf courses, cemeteries, and other xeric water-wise projects, right? So in the long term, we want to demand shift off the potable system to the non-pot system for large outdoor irrigated demands. Expanding our non-potable systems is a key piece of our long-range water supply strategy. And it's key to our ability to ensure a sustainable urban forest and landscape. We have a program that seeks to convert properties where possible. The photo at right was a large outdoor irrigated turf area that used to be on all potable water and was recently converted to non-potable water. These types of projects are generally at university campuses, churches, other large kind of institutional organizations. And we have a proactive program that helps them convert to non-pot. And then concurrently, we're looking to create irrigation efficiency and landscape efficiency changes that help minimize the amount of water. Our non-potable system is unique in Colorado and really across the West. Greeley, a lot like Fort Collins, has built and developed over agricultural lands. Those agricultural lands have been served for more than 100 years by a great system of irrigation ditches and laterals and headgates. And all of that infrastructure has been protected and maintained as the city grew and developed over it. And those ditches and irrigation systems remain a very valuable infrastructure for delivering raw water to these non-pot irrigation demands as the city grows, right? Yeah, they prevent the city from making mass investments in a lot of pipelines and other infrastructure that you commonly see in a non-potable program where a city might be pumping its wastewater after treatment back to outdoor irrigated demands. Greeley's system really attempts to maximize gravity, the wastewater effluent that we release that's fully consumable. We exchange or take a like amount upriver at some gravel pit storage. And then we do have some pumping that will ultimately be built to move some of that supply up to the very top of the city where the network of ditches can flow throughout the city and deliver water economically. Go ahead.
Is it okay to interrupt? We do have a question from Hayden Thomas, one of our students, about the ick factor of potable water. And how do we get public on board? And do you guys have public outreach programs? And how would you implement this in subdivisions or residential areas?
Yeah, so we are in the process of undertaking a pretty vast policy shift to essentially mandate that any large irrigable area in a new subdivision has to be irrigated with non-potable water. It's my perception that there's not a big hurdle to overcome with non-potable water in Greeley and beyond. If the non-potable source is just raw water from the river or the ditch, it's a bigger challenge when it's recycled wastewater. Greeley doesn't do recycled wastewater for direct non-pot reuse. And so that ick factor is pretty diminished. But we still have a sort of a public education effort. In fact, some of the public education effort is focused on that this is not treated wastewater effluent, right? This is just raw water out of the river diverted at the top of Greeley, same as it's been since 1870 for the irrigation of the parks and gardens of the city. And maybe the last component of that I didn't exactly address directly is the public outreach piece. We do a series of public engagement, public outreach, social media. We've got a sort of a YouTube series on different aspects of the utility, and non-potable water is one of those aspects of that communication plan. All right, I'm going to trudge ahead. So wanted to check in a little bit on the expansion of the Milton Seaman Reservoir. I made mention of that on the prior master plan slide. You can see the graphic at left, which came from the Denver Post and before that from the USGS, reveals both the proposed Glade Reservoir, which is part of the NIST project, Halligan expansion, which is part of the City of Fort Collins. That project is in the upper left on the North Fork, and then Milton Seaman expansion. And that's the project I described. It's right near the confluence. And of those three projects, Milton Seaman expansion has the most environmental impacts and is the most challenging to permit and construct. It has a variety of geologic construction challenges. It also doesn't have good access. If you've been up to Gateway Park and hiked up to the reservoir, you can probably understand and respect that, you know, getting a lot of large construction equipment back there would be both challenging and environmentally damaging. There are a number of habitat issues that are very real upriver of the existing footprint, designated of some threatened and endangered species habitat. And fundamentally, it's just a really tough site on channel for an expanded reservoir. Very difficult to obtain a LEDPA, which is the least environmentally damaging practicable alternative designation that a project must receive under the U.S. Army Corps of 404 permit process. So it was really this challenging set of facts that drove Greeley to really double down on the 404 process and evaluate alternatives more deeply, dig into our demands a bit more. And that drove us to innovate and look at other projects. We looked at a wide variety of other off-channel reservoir sites and the portfolios that would be required to store water there, and then looked at aquifer storage and recovery in a number of different aquifers. The permitting process is arduous, and a whole semester could be taught on the nuances of each step here. But needless to say, a variety of local, state, and federal agencies, the processes do not neatly align or overlap. Some of the state and local permits, particularly the county 1041 permits, are the most difficult to obtain and sometimes come with the most stringent mitigation requirements. And for a project like Milton Seaman Expansion, our final analysis was that this was a very risky permit to try and continue to pursue. The city of Greeley spent nearly $20 million between the year 2005 and the year 2020 trying to obtain a permit to expand Milton Seaman Reservoir. Our pivot through more robust analysis and evaluation of alternatives is to a project that doesn't require robust federal permitting. It's an aquifer storage and recovery project from a non-tributary aquifer at the northern edge of Weld County, known as the Terry Ranch Aquifer. The Terry Ranch property and the Terry Ranch Aquifer are bifurcated or separated, which is allowed under Colorado water law. So the owner of the land is separate from the owner of the water. Greeley acquired title to 1.2 million acre feet of fully consumable, reusable groundwater. It's generally of high quality from beneath the ranch, as well as all the easements and rights to access the water, to recharge the water. And so it's our intention to ultimately run the project as a sustainable aquifer storage and recovery project. The project stands to meet Greeley's long-term water needs and storage needs, and will be developed in phases over the decades to come. A little bit of background on how it works. You may know graphically, we've represented the Bellevue Water Treatment Plant. This location is above Fort Collins to the west on the Poudre River, right near Ted's Place at the mouth of the canyon. Greeley currently operates a number of transmission mains. One large transmission main in particular that that travels the path shown down through Windsor and up to Greeley. It's our intention to build a pump station down at the Windsor site and a pipeline that connects the ranch to our existing large capacity transmission main. And we'll operate that pipeline bidirectionally at a future date. Phase one will develop water from a well field at the Terry Ranch site, and it'll bring supplemental drought-proof water into the city's system as needed. And then in subsequent phases, we'll develop more wells and the pump station to be able to run the pipe bidirectionally. A little bit of background on what aquifer storage and recovery is. So you can see the graphic at the left represents a well where injection and storage is happening in wet years or times of surplus. So that is to say you can pump water back into the aquifer and it will store in a mound. And in a sandstone confined aquifer setting, the geology is such that you can maintain dominion and control over about 99% of the water, and you can also track its water quality. What you put down is what you get back up. While this system of aquifer storage and recovery may be new to Greeley and northern Colorado, it's common throughout Colorado and the U.S., commonly practiced in the South Metro area of Denver. It has very few environmental impacts, no evaporation, but it does require more pumping and treatment than maybe a traditional water process. And so for that reason, it is a little bit more expensive to operate. So the cost to pump water from Windsor up to the ranch for storage, and then to pump it out and treat it one more time before we bring it down and put it back into the treated water pipeline, all that has a cost that is more expensive on a per 1,000-gallon basis than the water we treat at our Bellevue or our Boyd Lake site. Why Terry Ranch? So anytime an approach to water supply feels novel or innovative, there are always folks who want to better understand it and better understand why the shift in direction. compared to other water options, Terry Ranch aquifer storage and recovery is more certain. It's lower cost. It has minimal environmental impacts, fewer permits, and it can begin development and utilization immediately without any federal permitting. We also utilized an innovative purchase structure whereby the city paid the seller with credits that can be redeemed for raw water. We talked a little bit earlier about CBT as a fundamental source of raw water in the Northern Colorado municipal service area. And so through this project, Greeley added within its own service area a new source of raw water, these Terry Ranch credits. And so what we did was we created 12,000 credits. Essentially, a credit is akin to 1 acre foot of supply under the 100-year decree of the aquifer. And so 12,000 credits were paid to the seller, and the seller then sells those back into the market to developers or others. This innovative approach allowed Greeley to obtain the asset, the easements, and some additional cash to build the infrastructure to connect the water asset to the city. All of that being acquired up front for no real capital outlay by the city. And then the seller is paid over time as they sell the credits back into the market. The water supply and the storage underground really diversifies Greeley's water sources and provides a lot of redundancy, which is important to the city. The underground storage is protection against droughts and watershed disruptions like wildfire. And these events are more and more common. We face more uncertainty every day in our business. An additional uncertainty, we spoke at a prior session of this course about wildfire, and I've got just a couple of slides to add to that perspective. Wildfire in our watersheds is one of the biggest challenges we face, and it's been a primary challenge for large municipal water providers for the past 15 plus years, and that doesn't stand to change anytime soon. And the data suggests that this is a challenge that is only amplifying in the magnitude of importance to us as water providers and as communities. Wanted to touch on the map at right. I realize it may be small. If you zoom in, you can see that the map is the entire Colorado Big Thompson system, as well as the Greeley Municipal Water System. You can identify Horsetooth Reservoir here let's see if I can point to it with the cursor here. There's Horsetooth Reservoir, Carter Lake, Chimney Hollow. And these are the progressive burn areas that have happened since about 2010. The Cameron Peak Fire is this large one, 208,000 acres, would have been larger had it not burned up against the boundary of the High Park Fire where there was not much fuel left. And then on the other side of the divide, primarily, you have the East Troublesome Fire, which totaled out at nearly 200,000 acres. And at one point, you might recall that these two fires nearly grew together. And then there was the Mullen Fire, not represented on this map, but burning here and burned across the state line, came in from Wyoming. And if you count that fire, along with Grizzly Creek, these are the four biggest fires in Colorado history, all transpiring in the year 2020. So really alarming conditions. In terms of day-to-day impact, we're very concerned about sediment, nutrients, and debris washing into our reservoirs, diversion structures, ditches, and our treatment plants. These wildfires and their destruction to the watershed create massive flood hazards and infrastructure risk. They create water quality degradation. Water is degrading beyond our ability to treat it. Turbidity that at times exceeds 100. So there's really profound impacts in storm events to our municipal water provider resources. And you can see in the photo at the bottom left, this is a picture of the Black Hollow flood. There's also tremendous risk and damage to private property, to the lives of the people in the way, and to the aquatic habitat in the river. We've seen tremendous numbers of fish kills every time there's a big runoff event, and you turn the water jet black and fill it with sediment, nutrients, and debris. there's an uncertain path ahead. We have no idea what the long-term impacts are on snowpack, on water quality, or on the nutrient loading in our reservoirs and the potential algae blooms that will arise. I see we have some questions. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, we have about 5 minutes left until we're running up till 5 o'clock. But if you have time to stay a few minutes after, those can stick around that want to can continue the conversation for a little longer. So sure. You want to go ahead and finish up what you got, though.
Yeah, I will. So just the, you know, you can see this is one of our high mountain reservoirs impacted severely by wildfire. And this is not different than what Denver Water saw in the O2 Hayman fire or Caro Springs in 2012 when they dealt with the fire in Rampart Range in the Waldo Canyon area. Of course, climate is a big challenge. We all see that our natural environment, our vegetation is drier. That is igniting forest fires of greater magnitude, and navigating that is an issue that must be dealt with by our communities and our water providers. Want to jump to this one. This is maybe a little bit unorthodox in terms of, you know, infrastructure and assets, but workforce development and leadership is just fundamental to some of the challenges we face as municipal utilities. Our ability to align strategy, budget, talent, and training with our mission is fundamental to our success. And that's challenging in the water sector. No two water providers are created equal. Small towns, small metro districts simply don't have the size, the economy of scale, or maybe the policymaker perspective on the importance of this work. Water providers all have limited budgets, limited bandwidth, and limited compensation resources to attract and retain the best talent. We're challenged to invest in talent, to develop our talent, to retain, and to make succession plans. Investing in internal and external communications, investing in strategic master planning are all critical. Make a game plan and stick to it unless it's not working, right? So this is Yogi Berra, one of my favorite guys in terms of quotes. And in the space of planning for water, variables are changing beneath our feet constantly. And this is the reality we live in, right? But not having analysis, data, or planning leaves us struggling to make prioritized investments in the right things that assure us a safe, reliable future. I also have a couple of slides here on regional collaboration. There are great opportunities for Northern Colorado to pursue regional collaboration. There are a number of groups working on it. There are great numbers of projects already underway, wildfire recovery amongst them. The reality is that it's challenging. The commitment of resources with no certain outcome is challenging, especially for smaller providers. It's a slow process to collaborate, and it requires some fundamental alignment of values. And the reality is that some municipal providers have such a well-developed system and vision for their long-term planning that their values are just a little bit different or fundamentally different from water providers who are small and trying to make sure that their day-to-day needs are met. And so reconciling those values and those priorities so that common work can occur is challenging. But the opportunities are huge. The opportunity for economies of scale to undertake projects that are too large for any single agency, the opportunity to share risk and the rewards, and the resiliency that can come from interconnects or mutual aid agreements. So there's an opportunity to work across user types that is unique in the regional collaboration space, and it can extend beyond municipal water providers. There can be collaboration with ditch companies and NGOs, and conservation districts and a variety of different other agencies. I can see we're just about up to time here. I thought I would share a couple of examples. This is, you know, real work that's happening as we speak, conversations amongst a number of Northern Colorado municipal providers. And this is a representation of the continuum of different programs or projects that we could elect to undertake with one another. The ones on the left require relatively moderate amount of resources. They have moderate risk. And they really build on existing programs. Those on the right require long-term investment, major commitment of staff. They have higher political risk. And you can see the furthest one at the right is a regional funding and protection for Northern Colorado water, right? Which fundamentally may impair private property rights and water rights owners to protect them from the development of water by outside Northern Colorado agencies. So you have this continuum. Some are probably very agreeable. Some are really complicated to undertake. And some we may not even have the legal structure available to us to undertake. So this is a quote that is kind of fundamental to the way Greeley approaches its municipal water system and its planning. Look ahead and plan for others as others have planned for you. This quote came from a group of business folks who wrote an article in the Greeley Tribune in 1941 advocating for the Colorado Big Thompson Project. And the statement holds as true today as it did then. I think I'll just leave this one for digestion. It just summarizes the things we've talked about today. And I'd be happy to answer questions.
Great. Thanks so much, Sean. I'm always amazed at what you guys are doing over at the city of Greeley. You're just at the forefront of the leadership in the region. It's in state and yeah, it's just great. So thank you for that. I know some folks might have to jump off for commitments they have after 5 o'clock, but I do want to get to the two questions that we have here. But before people jump off, I just want to give a round of applause. Thank you for that. We really appreciate it. And if it's okay with you, we'll share your contact information with the group so that if they have questions or want to meet up for a cup of coffee and talk about all things Greeley water, they can get a hold of you. So there's two quick questions. One's quick, is the material of the 60-inch pipeline for the Terry Ranch project. What's the material on that one?
So we have an existing 60, which is welded steel, and it's likely the Terry Ranch pipe will also be welded steel.
Okay, great. Also Terry Ranch, a couple questions here all lumped into one. By Brian Steen, what's the time frame for the development to use the aquifer? And they're asking about it connections to any other groundwater. You guys have identified that as non-tributary, but asking that question and any expected losses.
So one of the beauties in this aquifer storage and recovery project is it can be developed or built in phases, unlike a major dam project, right? Once you start a major dam, you really have to commit to it and build it continuously till you're complete and then start storing water after completion. Terry Ranch project can be developed incrementally. The reality for Greeley and part of the reason we could undertake a project like this is we have ample robust surface water supplies. So compared to other communities that are trying to undertake the conjunctive use of groundwater and surface water, most of those agencies are South Metro Denver groups who've developed on the Denver Basin confined aquifer water as their primary source. And now they're trying to bring in water from the South Platte River or otherwise through projects like the WISE program or other things. And so we have this tremendous strategic advantage that we already have a well-developed surface water portfolio. That surface water portfolio gets us out to at least the mid-2030s in our ability to serve growth. And with conservation programs and demand shifting to non-pot, it probably lasts us closer to the 2040 timeframe. And that allows us to develop this project really pragmatically, making phased investments over the next decade to connect all the infrastructures and build the well field. So I suspect that the project will be online around 2030. In terms of losses, I'm not sure quite how to interpret that. I will say in walking away from our expansion of the Milton Seaman Reservoir, we'll have to move a number of the water rights that were intended to be stored in that expanded reservoir, and we'll have to move their point of storage to the Terry Ranch Aquifer. some of those rights are conditional storage rights that were super junior, and they're going to be difficult or near impossible to move, right? They don't have any historic use. There's a likelihood that the process to move those will not yield any great water. Those rights that I speak of, though, are junior to NISP. And if NISP were to be built, the viability of that right junior to NISP is almost non-existent, right? It would take flood stage water to yield anything off of that right in a post-NISP world. And so what we're really giving up or losing is pretty inconsequential. We're also giving up or losing the ET that would come off the reservoir if it were a surface water bucket that the groundwater bucket doesn't have. And then maybe one last interesting fact that you all might, you know, enjoy or consider is the sources of supply that we are now working through in terms of agricultural transfers to municipal use are getting more and more junior, right? The most senior, most reliable water rights have kind of been eroded or consumed. They're still out there, but the majority of the water that's left in the ag sector is just not as senior. And so to acquire and store a large block of semi-junior water means that you have to have storage volumes that are multiples of what an average yield is in those junior water right systems. And so in our Milton Seaman project, we were looking at a 7-to-1 ratio. And then we were talking about a water level in that reservoir just going up and down through periods of drought and wet years. So utilizing every wet year to store up to the max, and then watching that water come way, way down in prolonged periods of drought. And not only is that not very environmentally conscientious, but it has a really extensive cost to the customer, right? Storage is costing somewhere between 7,000 and 10,000 acre per acre foot to build. And so if you're building all that storage to only store water imperiodically, that is a huge burden on the municipal customer. And for a city the size of Greeley at 110,000 people, a $500 million to $1 billion dam project is just financially unattainable.
Great. Did that answer all your questions, Brian? You had a few in there.
Yeah, that was perfect. Thank you so much.
Great. Any other questions from the group? Great. Well, thanks everyone.
I'll ask one real quick.
Go ahead, Joe.
Sean, you mentioned that a lot of the older irrigation infrastructure, the ditches and stuff, that a lot of times run through cities are now, they were used for transporting agricultural water in the past, but more and more they're being used to transport water that'll be used for cities. Do you foresee an update to that infrastructure in the future to reduce seepage losses in those ditches or evaporative losses by making those pipes lines or something like that?
It's a great question. And even though we get to take advantage of this, historic infrastructure and its general gravity nature, it does have pretty high losses. And it was often not built with any sort of efficiency in mind. We know that just in terms of pump stations and some pipelines to move our lower Poudre water back up to the top of the city, that we're looking at a 20 to 25 year capital program that's about $150 million. And that doesn't include a whole lot of ditch lining or piping. There's also, though, a reality that piping through subdivisions and other things just often makes sense. So does lining ditches through subdivisions. There's just a sort of a maintenance logic and all of that. And so as the city grows over those facilities, we're gaining efficiency, and there will ultimately become, just like in our conservation program, a good return on investment to eliminate that seepage and other loss to ensure that we can deliver more of every acre foot.
Thanks, Joe. All right. Well, thanks again, Sean.